Hey guys, I'm Heidi Preeb. Welcome back to my channel, or welcome if you're new here. Today on this channel, I want to talk about something that I think is not necessarily a myth in the attachment healing world, but something that is definitely oversimplified quite a bit, which is this idea that the best or easiest route to becoming securely attached is to date a securely attached person. Now, I think this idea is kind of downstream of the effects of the book Attached, that, in my opinion, really severely neglected basically all of the types other than anxious attachment in talking about what works as healing strategies. But what I want to go over today is how that strategy of dating a secure person and kind of allowing your nervous system to repattern around more secure bids for connection can be something that works, but it can also be something that, for those of us who are anything other than a little bit insecurely attached, can actually push us further into our own attachment strategies. And we're going to talk about why. Now, this video is not meant to be predictive, so I'm not saying that any of this is definitely going to happen. How we heal is so individual to each person. And I think that in a lot of cases, it can be definitely helpful to have secure influences in our lives, whether that's a partner, a therapist, a group of people who can model more of those secure relating skills for us. But I also don't want people to feel left behind or like they are broken in some way that is irredeemable if standing next to a securely attached person makes you feel about 10 times more dysregulated and broken than standing next to another insecurely attached person does. This was very much the case for me for a lot of my own life, and I think that it's the case for a lot of us who grew up with quite severely insecurely attached patterns. Because these things do exist on a spectrum, right? You can be a little bit anxious or a little bit avoidant, and for the most part, be able to relate relatively well to secure people. Or you can be quite intensely anxious, or quite intensely avoidant, or quite intensely disorganized or fearful avoidant, and have a lot of trouble relating to people who have more secure systems. And those people with more secure systems might, in fact, trigger you. So, what we're going to go over today is if this is something that you see yourself in, why this happens, as well as how we can start working on it, or at the least, give ourselves some empathy around the fact that it might take a while before we find ourselves being open to those more secure bids for connection. So, the first thing that I think it's really important to understand is that attachment theory doesn't just explain how we relate to other people. Okay, so it's not just an internal working model of what it means to be in relationship. It's also an internal working model of how to relate to ourselves. So basically, one of the things that gets modeled to us and kind of patterned into us from a very, very young age, based on our attachment relationships with our parents or early caregivers, is how we ought to be relating to our own nervous systems. So, starting from the time we are infants, we start picking up on things like which cues inside of our own nervous system indicate that we might be safe versus in danger, or which cues in our environment indicate that we might be safe versus in danger. And then our entire psychology organizes around those things because the human nervous system is predominantly wired for survival. So, for example, if I learn from a very young age that when I am feeling strong and competent and self-reliant, I am most often safe because maybe those were the conditions under which I didn't get rejected in my early environment, and I perceive not getting rejected as synonymous with safety, then I'm going to learn it is really important for me to tune into anything in my nervous system that feels like strength, competence, or self-reliance, and kind of double-click on that as I go through life. And when I'm in those states that I associate with safety, I am much more likely to feel regulated, right? Because regulation is what happens when our nervous systems feel like I'm okay here, I'm good, I'm safe, I can relax. And then when am I most likely to feel dysregulated? Probably in the instances where I feel needy or uncertain about how to keep myself resourced, or vulnerable in some way, right? These might not be inherently unsafe states for everybody, but if I have learned to associate safety with the opposite, then it is going to dysregulate me to be in these states. And then in order to re-regulate myself, I'm going to start seeking out opportunities to feel more of those things that regulate me, like independence, self-reliance, competence, whatever it is. And this is essentially the natural self-regulation cycle of avoidant attachers. Feelings of strength and competence and being in control of ourselves and being autonomous are what we would call organizing principles in the avoidant psyche. So these are states that we start slowly over time, kind of building the rest of our lives around. So we start unconsciously revolving a lot of our choices around how to bring ourselves back into those states. We might work jobs that highlight those states or that cause us to be in those states a lot of the time. And these are probably also the states that it feels like we can contribute to relationships through, right? So we learn to bring value to other people's lives through being the person who's always okay and who doesn't need to be taken care of in any significant way or who can always be counted on to be level-headed, whatever it is. But also, and this part is really, really important, okay? We're going to come back to it later. This is how we learn to relate to ourselves as well. So we might start to believe, if we have that avoidant patterning, that we are good and worthwhile people who are deserving of our own self-respect only if and when we are in those states of competence and strength and self-reliant. Again, this is a really important point that we're going to put a pin in and come back to. Okay, so it's not just that we're trying to relate to others and the world in this way. We're also mitigating our self-relationship through these states. But this is obviously not the pattern that all of us grew up with, right? So let's say we grew up in a household where we learned to associate safety with someone having their attention on us. So this is often what happens when we have parents or caregivers who are good at meeting our needs, but we have to work a little bit hard to get their attention and keep it on us. And so in this case, our nervous system might learn to associate safety with somebody paying attention to us positively or negatively, right? If we grew up in a household where we have to kind of work to get our parents' attention a little bit, even negative forms of attention, like our parents being mad at us, can actually signal to the nervous system that we're safe and it's okay to relax because at least they are training their attention on us at all. Right? And if this is the type of environment we grew up in, what our nervous systems are going to learn to associate with safety and regulation is being intertwined in relationships that are either very emotionally deep or intense, or just being in any sort of very interdependent system where we're both relied on by people and relying on others in a fairly significant way. This makes us feel like I'm not going to get forgotten. Right? Because the nervous system associates being forgotten with being abandoned and unsafe. And so, if this is the particular type of nervous system wiring that we have, what often makes us feel dysregulated is the sense that other people are fine without us. Like they could kind of take us or leave us. Right? And if we find ourselves in that state, we might find it really hard to regulate. And so, our nervous systems are naturally going to start searching for ways to kind of up the emotional intensity levels inside of our close relationships so that people get drawn back towards us or back towards their relationship with us again. And so this is the kind of natural unconscious cycle of anxious attachment. Staying in close connection with other people becomes an organizing principle in the psyche. And so we start unconsciously revolving a whole bunch of our life choices around how to make sure that we aren't getting left alone. So we might choose careers where we are chronically needed by other people. And our kind of unconscious strategy for forming friendships or partnerships might be figuring out what other people want from us or what we think that they want from us, and then trying to deliver that as much as possible so that we don't get abandoned. And again, this part's really important and we're going to come back to it later. We are also going to learn to relate to ourselves through this particular lens. So we might learn to think of ourselves as only good and worthwhile people if other people want to stay close to us and not abandon us. That's going to be seen as the proof that we are okay and we can relax and feel good about ourselves. And then last but not least, because we very often neglect to talk about fearful avoidance, if we learn that from a young age, we're going to have to be ready at any time to quickly and accurately orient ourselves to confusing and contradictory signals about what's safe, then what often happens is our nervous system starts feeling safe only if and when we have a really good model or a really good story for understanding our own reality. So if we are showing up in a situation, having whatever reaction we're having, and then automatically displaying that, that usually means in the early environment of the fearful avoidant that they are not likely to be safe. So the nervous system learns, as long as I'm able to kind of orient myself and figure out which strategy I should be using here. So should I be relying on my strength and competence and independence? Or should I be leaning into connection or kind of merging with another person to feel safe? As long as I'm able to orient myself and then choose the appropriate response, and again, this is largely happening unconsciously for the fearful avoidant, I am safe, and so the better a model I have for understanding which type of situation I'm in, the more safe I'm likely to be. Whereas in ambiguous situations where I don't know how to show up or how to best navigate my environment, I'm going to get very dysregulated. So when people don't act the way that I expect them to, or when reality in general does not fit into the model of reality that I have created for myself, these things tend to dysregulate us. And then again, when we are dysregulated, what do? We double down on our attachment strategy. And in the case of the fearful avoidant, we go all in on trying to make meaning out of the events of our lives rather than directly engaging with them. So over time, meaning making, or being able to accurately orient ourselves in reality, starts to become the organizing principle for the fearful avoidant nervous system. So a lot of our choices as we grow up end up organized around our desire to understand the human condition and find these kind of core truths or underlying principles that govern life and people and the way that things are. So we might find ourselves choosing work that has more of an analytical bent to it, where that need to be able to kind of quickly orient ourselves or make meaning out of a complex system is very useful. And we might find ourselves relating to other people more through kind of psychoanalyzing people and putting them into models or maps inside of our mind, rather than just directly relating to them and staying present with them. And again, this patterning is also going to show up in our self relationship. So we're going to feel like we are people that we can trust and respect if we are very good at orienting our behavior well to the situation at hand. And again, we're going to circle back to this later. But first, we're going to look at just how different it is to be securely attached. Okay, so in all three of those categories that we just talked about, avoidant, anxious, and fearful avoidant, essentially, we can think of that organizing principle in the psyche, whether that's self-reliance or connection or meaning-making, as kind of a statement piece inside of a room. So if we are designing a room and we want to have a really bright, really colorful couch that kind of grabs people's attention as soon as they walk into the room, one of the easiest ways to do that is to make sure that the rest of the furniture in the room does not pull attention away from that couch. So we might want to have tables and footrests and other chairs that are not quite as attention grabbing. So we can kind of think of the organizing principles of each attachment style psyche as that kind of statement piece of furniture. So the avoidant attacher's psyche is oriented around drawing their own attention as well as other people's attention towards their strength and self-reliance. And then the anxious attacher psyche is oriented towards drawing other people's attention towards whatever it is that they think that person might want to connect with them over. And then the fearful avoidant psyche is organized around that meaning making, right? So being able to orient themselves properly inside of whatever context they show up in so that they know how to be safe. And the secure attacher psyche is a little bit different because the secure attacher, especially if they were secure from a young age, grows up in an environment where safety is implied. So they don't have to organize all of their attention around how to stay safe. Their nervous system learns it is safe to be me across a wide range of experiences, feelings, and scenarios. So I can be strong, competent, independent, self-reliant, and that is a totally safe state to be in. Nobody's going to abandon me for being that way. But also, I can be struggling, I can be vulnerable, I can be wanting connection, and it's okay and safe for me to be in that state. And I can be making meaning out of things and finding the patterns in things, and that's a safe state to be in. But I can also be in a state of having no idea what's going on, not being able to orient myself properly to reality, and instead, I can just kind of play around and connect with people, and that's also a safe state to be in. So the secure attacher learns over time that the way to stay balanced and healthy and to stay in a state of overall self-respect is to allow all of those parts of themselves to exist and to express themselves in whatever parts of their lives it feels most natural for that to happen in. So to kind of follow that metaphor of the statement piece of furniture, what's going to be more likely for the secure attacher is that you walk into that kind of room that represents their psyche, and there's no one piece of furniture that strongly jumps out at the expense of other parts. Right? There might be some pieces of furniture that are a little bit more attention-grabbing than other pieces, but overall the decor is going to be very balanced. They're not going to be trying to draw your attention away from any particular part of their psyche, because most parts of it they assume are safe and okay and parts that they can connect from. And this is actually where things get really interesting on an interpersonal level. Because the secure person has grown up thinking there is nothing wrong with my couch and also nothing wrong with my ottoman and also nothing wrong with the table and also nothing wrong with the rug, when they walk into other people's psyches, they are kind of going to assume that other people feel the same. But this is definitely not true for those of us who err insecurely attached, right? So for example, a secure person meeting an avoidant person, to follow this metaphor, might kind of walk into the room that is their psyche and see that really giant, bold statement couch of look at how independent and how together I am. And they might go, wow, that's a beautiful couch. And the avoidant might feel really proud and acknowledged. But then they might also walk over to this lamp that the avoidant has tried to shove into the corner that represents the parts of themselves that are struggling or in need. And they might go, oh, hey, look at this lamp. And then what happens is, based on how avoidantly attached we are and how shameful we feel like it is for someone to see the parts of ourselves that we're struggling with, or even for ourselves to encounter the parts of life that we're struggling with, we might become incredibly dysregulated by someone else seeing that part of us. So by a perfectly secure partner coming up to us and just casually talking about something that they notice we're struggling with, or telling us that we did something that made them uncomfortable, or whatever it is, depending on how shameful we believe that to be, this might be instantly very dysregulating to us. Because again, remember, we might have that patterning, if we err more avoidant, of relating to ourselves as good and worthwhile people who are deserving of self-respect only when we are in states of competence and strength. But the thing about secure connecting is that it requires us to be seen in all of our states, right? That is literally what secure connection is. It is love that does not need us to be any different than how we are to be related to. And so the avoidant attacher, ironically, might feel a lot more comfortable inside of dynamics where the other person also expects them to be perfect, which is often the case with more anxious attachers who might have a tendency to idealize their love interests, right? It matches the avoidant worldview of I am only okay if I am doing everything right, whereas the secure worldview of you are okay even when you're not doing things right is very foreign to the avoidant attacher. And so when it comes online, it can actually be quite dysregulating. Because if we have spent our entire lives organizing our full psyches around the idea that having very high standards for ourselves and meeting them is the thing that keeps us safe and okay, letting in the idea that we could be loved without meeting those standards, for most of us, does not feel relieving. It feels like a threat to the thing that is at the center of our understanding of ourselves and how reality functions. And so on paper, it might feel like, of course, the way to heal avoidant attachment is to simply be with someone who doesn't need you to be perfect to be loved. But in practice, what's probably going to come up the first or second or hundredth time that someone sees us in our imperfection and tries to relate to us that way is our bodies are going to go into total resistance and dysregulation. And this might be very surprising to us as well. Okay, so this was something that I remember being very disruptive and disorganizing for me the first time I ever had a partner come to me and talk about something I was doing that they were uncomfortable with through the lens of, hey, this is just how this makes me feel, and I wonder if we can talk about it. And there was not shaming, there was not, you're wrong for being this way, but instead there's this kind of assumption of charitability that maybe I hadn't realized I was making them uncomfortable and they could just tell me and then we could fix it. And the thing is, they were completely right, but what I wanted to do in that moment was absolutely not relax into the welcome comfort of secure love. It was go isolate the hell out of myself until I fixed that problem and came back perfect. because that is what the nervous system of the avoidant attacher knows to do to re-regulate itself. Right? And so in this moment, what we are tasked with doing is actually fighting our own regulation strategy and being able to stay present long enough to learn a new one. So to learn to be present long enough to tolerate sitting inside of a connection where every bone in our bodies is screaming at us, if you continue to connect from this state, the state where you are imperfect and don't yet know what to do and are incompetent, you will lose all of your own self-respect. That is a lot harder than defaulting to that old, well-trodden nervous system pathway of retreating and trying to fix ourselves before we get back into connection. Or in some cases, if we see the thing that we're being asked to change or adapt as not legitimate or something that we think is worth our time and effort, dismissing that then. But the point is, taking ourselves off of that pedestal that we believe keeps us safe, where we are constantly striving to be better and better and better, and allowing ourselves to be in connection when we're getting things wrong, and to accept somebody treating us with dignity when we're getting things wrong, this can be genuinely psychologically disorganizing for us. Okay? It requires us to challenge some of the beliefs and assumptions that have been at the absolute core of our nervous system and our sense-making for literally as long as we can remember. And this is a process, right? It feels worse before it feels better for a lot of us to kind of let down our old organizing principles and let our systems rearrange around a new set of beliefs. And it's not that we can't reorganize in that way, right? That's literally what the process of earning secure attachment is. But what I want to do with this video is just draw some attention to the fact that it is very, very normal to feel more uncomfortable inside of secure connections than inside of insecure ones if we ourselves are quite insecurely attached, because secure connections expect us to be able to hold all parts of ourselves with dignity. And this is precisely what our psyches are organized around not doing if we are insecurely attached. We've learned I'm okay in certain states, I'm not okay in other states, and so I've gotten really good at optimizing for the states that it is okay for me to be in, and really good at hiding the states that I believe it's not okay for me to be in. And so when we're in situations like trying to form more secure connections, where we're continuously needing to access and kind of live from the part of ourselves that we have spent our whole lives trying to hide, it is highly likely that the first, like, hundreds of times we try to do that, we're going to get met with a ton of resistance inside of our system. Okay, for most of us, it is not going to feel like a relief at first. It's going to feel like suspending a lot of disbelief and acting in opposition to what our body believes is going to keep us safe. Now, we're going to talk about how this shows up for the anxious attacher. So, if we can imagine the secure attacher as walking into the avoidant psyche and pointing at something that they are struggling with and compassionately going, "Oh, hey, what's going on over there?" We can think of the equivalent in the anxious brain as the secure person walking into your psyche and going, "Oh, cool, nice statement couch full of the things that we both like and all of the ways that you're hoping to connect with me. But hey, where do you keep your boundaries and your interests that are different than mine and the parts of yourself that actually aren't like me?" Because again, for the secure psyche, differences are not seen as threatening. And so secure love is going to expect us to keep our differences online and on display inside of connection, which for the anxious attacher, who might believe that if I am different from this person, or if I set boundaries with them, or if there are ways where we butt heads or don't agree with each other, then I'm going to get abandoned. Being asked to show those parts of ourselves can feel terrifying and annihilating to our sense of safety. Because remember, the anxious attacher often learns to connect by adapting themselves to other people's preferences and values or whatever it is that they think is going to get them seen as worthy in the other person's eyes. And then the anxious attacher thinks of themselves as worthy only if people want to stay close to them and not abandon them. And so being asked to show the parts of yourself that are separate and different from people, or being asked to be clear about what your preferences and boundaries are, might sound like someone saying to you, "Hey, show me all the areas where I'm going to abandon you because I can't meet you there." But again, Secure Love expects that everyone's independence is going to be maintained inside of relationships, that people are going to come in with their own boundaries, with their own separate preferences and separate interests and separate lives. And as much as there's also something really beautiful that's going to get built together, it's not going to come at the expense of each person's individuality. But sometimes for the anxious attacher, having one's individuality and independence respected feels like getting left alone. And so the more both people's autonomy is preserved inside of a connection, the more the anxious attacher might get dysregulated. And then when dysregulated, what do we double down on? Our traditional attachment strategies. So they might double down on erasing whatever differences exist between them and the other person and trying to find connection through that merging or enmeshing process. Because this feels way less scary than replacing the organizing principle of adaptability with something different. Secure love requires us to be able to relate from our wise, discerning, and boundaried selves, right? To have dignity in the parts of ourselves that know how to preserve our authenticity, even in the face of potential abandonment. So just like secure love requires us to be seen in the ways that we're struggling, it also requires us to be seen in our individuality. So to advocate for ourselves, to hold our boundaries strong, even against pushback sometimes, to be able to make wise decisions about how to keep our kind of shape online inside of relationships, right? How to keep our definition even inside of intimacy. So not being in a perpetual state of scanning for rejection and then adapting ourselves to whatever we think is going to not make us rejected, but to actually be willing to risk rejection for the sake of keeping ourselves full. This is what secure love requires of us. And this is not going to feel comfortable in the initial stages of healing from anxious attachment. It is not going to feel like relaxing into this perpetual state of being accepted and loved by another person. It's going to feel like being tasked with the requirement of keeping ourselves online when every bone in our bodies is screaming, fold and become what the other person wants. Right? Because if our organizing principle is adaptability and merging, developing a backbone is going to be psychologically disorganizing. And it's going to take a while for us to become comfortable trusting that we can relate from that new pattern, where we're keeping more of who we actually are online inside of connections. And again, the point of this video is just to make clear that these resistance points we might hit do not necessarily indicate that we are on the wrong path. It's to get clear about the fact that earning secure connection is often about doing what does not come naturally to us and allowing ourselves to stay present in those moments of dysregulation where our old strategy is screaming at us, just do the thing that gets you back to safety, and reminding ourselves, actually, I'm looking for a new form of safety. I'm looking for a form of safety that allows all parts of myself to be online inside of connection. And that is going to feel like work and true vulnerability. Because especially if we're coming from that anxious side of the spectrum, it's often a lot more vulnerable to assert who we actually are and risk being left for it than it is to, for example, tell a story that we know is going to endear the other person to us or get their sympathy, right? The real vulnerability is keeping our shape online. And regulating ourselves through those vulnerable moments is really genuine, hard, and honest attachment work. And then, last but not least, we're going to look at what happens for the fearful avoidant. So, imagine the secure attacher coming into your psyche, seeing all of these beautiful theories and stories you've created about life, the universe, other people, yourself, your relationship to them, and picking up off the floor a piece of your direct experience with no interpretation on top. So some emotion that you are trying to keep hidden, but you are kind of just giving away with your body language that they are picking up on and attuning to, regardless of what complex story you are telling them to try to distract them from what is actually happening in the moment. For fearful avoidance, there is almost nothing more threatening than any form of raw experience that they have not had the time to put layers of interpretation on top of before presenting it to someone else. So to tell someone what we're feeling before we understand why we are feeling that, or to just let someone know everything that's going on for us about a given topic without figuring out which pieces are the most relevant or what's going to get us to the outcome that we want. So not trying to connect all of the dots before connection, but going into connection, giving someone the raw data points of our lives and our feelings and our day-to-day experiences. And of course, this does not mean that we let everyone know every passing thought or feeling that comes through us, but it means that we do kind of have to put down some of our models for understanding reality and other people and ourselves, because to be in a secure connection means to build things together from the ground up rather than understanding each other from the top down. So what the heck does that mean? Something that I've noticed is that most fearful avoidants seem to come into connection with this idea that connection means either two people perfectly figuring each other out, so understanding all of the different models that you can run someone through, understanding someone's trauma patterning and attachment style and personality type or whatever other models that they use to understand people through, and kind of learning about each other as though people are this kind of book that can be read and perfectly figured out. Or maybe they come in with this kind of grand romantic narrative about their own lives that they're expecting someone to play a certain role in. But secure connection is more about showing up over and over and over again to the present moment and figuring out how the two of you can experience it in a way that allows you to build something together. Right? So secure connection is not so much about cracking the code on each other and being able to perfectly place each other inside of each other's models of reality. It's more about figuring out what do we co-create when we come together. And over time, we have experiences together and we develop kind of shared forms of meaning about things while also respecting and understanding each other's differences. So there is a learning about each other process, but there's also just a lot of staying present and figuring out how it feels to be around each other. What it's like to do life together day after day after day. Which direction both of your lives end up slowly going in over time as you keep combining your lives. So it's more about what you're building together out of a series of moments where you stay present with each other than it is about kind of cracking this giant code about whether or not you're compatible. Right? So switching from that kind of defense system where you're always figuring out what the right adaptation to this moment is for the fearful avoidant, to a system where it's more about tuning into what is true in this moment, including the fact that I might be desperately trying to figure out what I'm supposed to be saying or doing. And being honest about that is what it takes to start moving into more secure relating. But again, this is going to be incredibly distressing for the fearful avoidance system, which believes that the way to stay safe is to at all points in time be doing kind of a calculation about how you ought to be showing up. Simply being open and honest is going to feel so foreign that it might feel absolutely pointless to do for a very long period of time. Because when we are just present and honest with people, what we are giving up the right to do is control someone else's perception of us, control our own perception of another person, right? By fitting them into all of these models and narratives that we might have in our head, and actually just learning through direct experience how this person is and how they show up in the world, and what is very unique both about them and about who we are around them and about what we could uniquely create with them. This is a much slower and more embodied process than that kind of top-down process of trying to figure out who should I be and how should I show up in order to best relate to this person based on who I think they are and how they're likely to show up, right? It's like learning to speak a completely different language with a completely different alphabet. And our nervous system might take a very long time to learn that that system is safe, especially if we sometimes have connections where it's not, and we do need to retreat and try again with someone who it is safer for us to be more honest and unguarded with. So, the point of all of this is not to say that there's no way to get to that secure place where we're trusting our instincts, we're understanding how to show up from presence and authenticity and allowing someone to see and meet with dignity all parts of the self, whether that is the parts of ourselves that are struggling and in need of support, which are the parts that the avoidant attacher tends to internally dissociate from and hide, whether it's the part of ourselves that are different from the other and that are in fact quite independent and boundaried, which are the parts of the self that the anxious attacher tends to naturally dissociate from and hide from others, or whether it's the parts of ourselves that don't need to be constantly fitting things into models and theories and making meaning out of any given moment, and can actually just show up and be with our direct experience and trust that subtle forms of meaning need to be built or to emerge over time in connection with other people, which are the parts of the self that the fearful attacher has usually never learned to lean into or rely on. All of these parts of the self need to be brought into the picture in order for us to be able to both give but also to receive secure love. And so for a really long time, secure forms of connection might feel very uncomfortable before they become something that our nervous systems learn to trust is healthy and okay, or in nervous system language, is safe. And so the point of this video, again, is not to discourage us if we have a much harder time orienting ourselves around secure connections than insecure ones. Truly and honestly opening ourselves up to secure love, if we are severely insecurely attached, is going to feel disorienting and dysregulating before it starts to feel orienting and regulating. That is a process that for a lot of us is very, very normal and is where the real growth work happens. All right, I'm going to leave this at that for today. But as always, any questions, anything coming up for you as you've gone through this video, please leave in the comment section below. I love you guys. I hope you're taking care of yourselves and each other. And I will see you back here again really soon.